Okay. Welcome, everybody. Tonight's class called 7 Weeks to Transformation, Sfirat HaOmer Explorations. Okay, so we are going to, I'm going to share a, let's see, get this. Okay, so let's get to screen sharing. Let me just, oh, we got Diane Schrenzel. Diane Schrenzel in the house, who just came back from, let's just, okay, once let me stop the share. Try this again.
Hello, Rabbi.
Hey, welcome back from Paris.
Wow.
And everyone else.
Welcome back, Diane.
Oh, thank you.
How was it being home? Was it nice?
I think I haven't even comprehended it because it's basically a 20-hour type of a day because I left this morning, went straight into work. So, but yes, it is. It does feel nice to be back.
Well,
thanks for asking.
And it's good to have you back. All right, here we go. This is a video with James Clear, who wrote Atomic Habits. But before he wrote Atomic Habits, I don't know. Please take some because, well, of course, the other students have not showed up yet, you know.
And be found in science. That's according to author.
All right, so this is called How Small Habits and a 2-Minute Rule Can Help You Your Productivity. Here we go with James Clear.
James Clear, who says breaking down tasks into small, achievable goals leads to higher productivity. Think about that for a second. He applies Sir Isaac Newton's laws of motion to achieve these targets.
Clear writes, Newton's 3 laws of motion can be used as an interesting analogy for increasing your productivity. Simplifying your work and improving your life. More than 400,000 users subscribe to Clear's newsletter, I'm one of them, on habits and performance. His work has been used by the teams in the NFL, NBA, and MLB, as well as leaders of Fortune 500 companies. James Clear is here. Good morning.
Good morning.
So tell us about the new work that you're doing.
Sure. So habits are really important because they compound over time. So you know, if you were able to just get 1% better each day for a whole year, you'd end up almost 37 times better by the time you're done with it. So they seem like really small choices, right? In the moment, it seems like nothing in order to make these choices. But over the span of our lifetimes, they end up making the difference between who you are and who you could be.
Right. The New York Times is coining that term, essentially micro progress, to describe breaking it down into small units to achieve a bigger goal. What's a way to start that?
Sure. So I like to talk about.
Okay, we continue. All right.
About the 2-minute rule. And the idea here is that you want to downscale your habit until it only takes 2 minutes to do. So, for example, going for a run might be downscaled into just tying your running shoes, or folding the laundry is downscaled into fold the first pair of socks, or
point.
The idea is that we
don't
often
like
optimize for the result, but instead we should optimize for the starting line, not the finish line.
Yeah, you said don't look at the big picture of success. You should really concentrate on just do something.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you achieve a result, you really only change your life for the moment. Like achieving your goal, you know, if you have a goal to clean your room, for example, then your room is clean now. But if you don't change the habits, the pack rat, sloppy habits behind that goal, then you're going to have a messy room 2 weeks from now.
Why are habits important, James?
Well, habits, of course, get us the results that we want. So they can help us earn more money or lose weight or be more productive. But the real reason that habits matter is because each action that you take is like a vote for the type of person that you want to become. Huh. So they help you embody the sense of being that type of person. Each time you write, you are a writer. Each time you play the violin, you are a musician. Each time you work out, you are an athlete. And so your habits are the method through which you embody your identity and develop your sense of self, your self-image.
We are what we repeatedly do. Tell me if there's a huge problem I've got. Let's say addiction to technology. How do I take a massive thing like that I want to fix and break it down into manageable pieces?
Sure. Well, I mean, we're all addicted to our phones. You know, we have our smartphones on us all the time. Where do you leave your phone at night?
In my hand as I cuddle it with it.
I mean, this is what a lot of people deal with, right? Yeah. Their phone is the last thing they see when they go to bed at night and the first thing they see when they wake up in the morning. So one thing that you could do is just move your phone to a different place to charge it. So you could charge in the bathroom, for example. Set your alarm there. And then the only goal here is just to reduce the amount of time that you're going to mindlessly browse while you're laying in bed.
Mm-hmm. What about those initiating actions that cause me during the day to go change it? Do I have to get habits to get me from being triggered?
Well, these cues are everywhere, right? And so, for example, if you look on my phone, I've tried to reduce some of the cues so that I have no apps
You've
on the home screen.
Cues. Oh.
Right?
Yeah.
And the goal here is just to increase the friction a little bit. So I can still go to Instagram, for example, and swipe over, and then it's inside this nested folder. Mm-hmm. But I just don't want to do it mindlessly. And so the whole idea with habits is to try to increase the amount of friction that are associated with bad habits, to put more steps between you and the bad behaviors and fewer steps between you.
You're the expert at the table. What's your best habit, do you think?
I think probably the best one is that I leave my phone in another room until lunch each day. And so that gives me like 3 to 4 hours of focused, productive work to just...
Do you have any friends? Do you have a wife?
Very few.
I don't know how you do
but
that.
I do have a great
very few.
Yeah.
But make a habit of reading his newsletter. That's what
I
mean, we kept talking
about,
we kept teasing Sir Isaac Newton. So we should at least point out quickly, you know, one of his three laws, right? Objects in motion tend to stay in motion.
Yeah. Getting started, it allows you to develop the most effective form of motivation, which is progress. And so if you can see yourself getting these small wins, then you have a reason to continue working. And if you start in just a small way, then you're going to want to keep going.
Thank you, James. That was my goal this year. It's like, don't worry, just get on the treadmill and walk for 10 minutes. And then all of a sudden, you're there. It's 30 minutes. It's 40 minutes. You started it. Yeah.
Just started. Thank you, James Clear.
You're welcome.
Very nice to meet you.
Okay. There you have it. All right, so this was part of his whole productivity idea that then developed into a book called Atomic Habits. But I like this. I just want to focus because I only want to focus on one thing, which is the 2-minute rule. So first of all, we have to analyze what is why do we have a tremendous resistance to do something which is beneficial to us? You know, why is it? You know, let's say, for example. We have an annoying phone call we have to make. Imagine that. So what do we want to do? Avoid it. I'll watch a little. Get on the phone a little bit. You scroll. Time for a snack. Maybe you have a schmooze with somebody. I get on the phone. Have a little phone call. You're avoiding that call. You know you got to make it today. You got to make the call. You don't want to make the call. So what's his basic idea? What is James Clear's basic concept here?
Start by picking a time to call them.
So number one, put in your calendar. Say, I will call Mr. Jones at 9:30, and I'm just going to do it because it'll be 2 minutes or it'll start. I'll just start the call, and once I'm in the call, maybe if it's unpleasant, I'll do it and I'll gauge it. There's another way of saying it called.
It's the first step to do it because
Mark,
you don't do it.
What did Mark Twain call this?
So, for example, remember we ate falafel in Israel? The best falafel in Israel.
Yes, we did.
Saying this guy lived right next to the best falafel in Israel.
Yes. So it's the reverse. So things that you want to have more of, you create less resistance. So if you want to, let's say take the phone call. So you're going to put out the night before on your screen a big thing. Call Mr. Jones at 9:30, and his phone number is right there. You don't have to look for it. And not only that, here are your talking points. You don't have to think about what you're going to think. You're going to go to A, to B, to C, and you're going to get to that call, which Mark Twain said called eating the frog. You got to eat the frog. That frog's not going away. Mr. Jones is not going away. You need to deal with it. And they say you want to eat you want to eat the frog early so it doesn't suck up all your available time of the day. You're avoiding making the call. Yes, Ilya.
What happens?
Yeah, Ilya.
You lose track of time. It's 9:32.
Right.
You said you're going to call 9:30. It's 9:32. You're like, well, it's already 2 minutes past
Yes, you see, that's exactly, it's a Yetzer Hara. It's a part of you that wants to avoid the conflict. In other words, the key thing is like this. We want to be in a bubble of comfortability. We don't want stress. We don't want discomfort. We don't want conflict. We don't want confrontation. We don't want challenge. But we know that everything that we want to accomplish requires a little bit of all those things. For example, let's take health and wellness, right? So let's say I, today is a good example. I wanted to bite after Pesach. Shall we say there may be the calorie of two that you may have encountered over the holiday? You may take out the challah, but there seems to be a lot more there. So I wanted to bike ride, but I did not do all the things I said. I didn't put my clothes on. I'm working from home. I didn't put the shorts and the sneakers on. And then as soon as my whatever call I made, I had a clear hour to go. I didn't do that. So I'll do it. And I get this call, and then you get that call. And before you know, I'm here. Did nothing but but if I would have put the, you know, I would have said, today I want a bike ride. I want to have my goals. I want to do it at, I have this call from 10 to 11. I want to do it at 11 o'clock. Put the shoes on, the bike shoes on, 4-9, the shorts, the t-shirt. Okay, the shirt, the regular work shirt. So therefore, when I'm on the Zoom, won't look weird.
You can set a calendar on my very phone.
But it's not enough. You want to review. The goal is to get all the, take as many. You want to decrease the points of resistance. Conversely, what was your example? How do you,
Let's say the best. And every time you come out of the house, you have a temptation to go and eat that falafel.
Yes. Okay. So the bottom line is that you have to make some sort of additional resistances to avoid going there. Well, you have to think about what that would be. I mean, for certainly if you have the stuff, let's say cake and cookies in the house. So let's say you want to have a well-deserved treat on Shabbos. Yeah. You don't buy enough cake and cookies on Shabbos to last you for the whole week. And then it's on the counter saying, Hanan, you've been a good boy today.
Just one.
You deserve it. You have had a rough day. You deserve it. Just what?
Conversely,
yes.
If you take everything out of your house,
yes,
you may end up indulging more.
Oh, right. But you're right.
You might compensate another way. It's not this habit's going to solve all the problems. It's just that his basic point is that obviously there may be other habits. His key thing is that everybody focuses on the goal. I want to lose so much, I want to weight. I want to do this. I want to do that. Really, it's about it's not the finish line. It's getting to the start line. Because once you get going, once you put on the bike shoes and you're dressed to go, and you'll go. When you have all the information to make the phone call, you'll make the call. You'll deal with it. That's the basic hop. So, but the key thing is just to remove the resistance and just say, commit. I'm only going to do 2 minutes of it. For example, let's say you have a book you want to read. And you're looking at it. And then you say on the shelf, I want to read that book. And you keep on telling the book, I'm going to read you. But it seems to be still on that thing. This is there. It's not getting read. It is not. This book is not getting read. But you say, I'm going to commit. I'm going to have a book by my bedside. I'm going to read just one page. No more. One page. Realistically, you're not going to eat just one page. Once you're going to read it, you're going to engage with it. And then, right. Because the resistance is at the start. Once you overcome that resistance, that procrastination, then you're generally going to have more success. It's that starting is very hard. Starting is very hard. That's why he says, just get down to, you remove all the resistance. Like you have your shoe, your sneakers on, you'll go for a walk. You'll have whatever you need to go for a walk. You'll have your earbuds here. They're charged up. You got your playlist all ready to go, or your podcast all set, you know, then futzing around. You just, you know, put everything and just, you're out the door. That's an idea. It's a great idea. It's a basic idea and a good idea.
The only thing is, what I've noticed for myself is once I'm doing it, I'm looking for the exit strategy.
Okay, it's true. Obviously, you're right. So
you need somebody to push you sometimes.
Okay, this is not solving all the problems. In fact, he, in his book, which he then developed about 5 years after this video, this interview, was Atomic Habits to deal with the other issues. So he has other strategies. So Yeah, it's like 10 strategies. So I can't, I'm not, that would be on the his sheer Atomic Habits. Yeah, you can get it on like under $20 and it's worth the read. There you go. Yeah, I recommend it highly. It's good. I read it. It's worthwhile even to rereading it because basically, the way that Hanan pointed out very nicely, it's really it's strategies to deal with the Yetzirah, the part of us which is that wants to maintain ourselves in the comfort pleasure zone and resist all growth.
I think that, so
that this is just one strategy. It's not the
fight here between the intellect and the emotion.
That's correct.
And what the Torah is trying to teach us in the Kabbalah is how to use the intellect and overcome our instant gratification impulses. And that's what Torah is about. Like, for example, let your tzach, okay?
Right.
Or let you know.
Yeah.
Like, right now you're walking somewhere on the street and somebody comes to you and gets you so mad and does something, spits on you or something.
Right.
Just giving an example. And at the moment you're so mad, you want to kill him.
Right.
And the Torah tells you, look, it's up.
Right.
It makes you, it helps, the Torah
tells like
you,
stop.
Use your intellect not to kill this guy because the Torah says, and then you overcome your emotions.
Correct. So, That is 100%.
I mean, I give an extreme case, but I'm just
that,
saying.
That is a major objective of the Torah. And this, and we're going to focus on a specific element of that, because that actually that breaks down to, that sounds very. Okay. So, all right. So let's, Vavakasha, let me share the screen. We're going to bring into, we're counting the Omer. Let's get into the Omer.
Yes, it was eight.
Yes, it was eight. Pretty well, better. Excellent. Okay. All right. So, Diane, are you able to read? Diane, are you with us?
Yes, I am here. Yes, right. I can read.
All right. So I'm. All right. Let's see. All right. So we have. This is in the book of Vayikra, the Parshat Emor, Shavuot. Go ahead, read it out.
Okay. You shall then count 7 complete weeks after the day following the Passover holiday when you brought the Omer as a wave offering until the day after the 7th week when there will be a total of 50 days. On that 50th day, you may present new grain as a meal offering to God. From the land
So basically, there are two offerings. On the second day of Pesach, they offered a Omer offering. So anybody know, this is extra credit, this is a senior fellowship thing. What was the Omer offering made out of?
Omer?
Yeah, but what was it? What grain? One of the two. Correct. Yeah. So rye is barley. Okay. They would take about 50 ounces of barley. They would toast it. They would grind it and make it into a meal offering. And they would do that on the second day of Pesach in Israel, and that would be which is the first day of Chol Hamoed. And then that night, when they did the harvesting, they would start. They did the waving in the day, but they did the harvesting at night. Right. And then all the Jews would do what we still do today. The count. It would say today Hayom Yom Echad Yamim BaOmer LaOmer. Today is the first day of the Omer.
Barley would mash.
The amount of grain the amount of flour which we would then obligate you in challah, basically 50 ounces, a little less than 5 pounds.
Each one of them corresponds to 49.
That I don't know about. It's an epha of it's a tenth, 50 ounces.
Okay, no.
No. So then they would count for to the 50th day. And what's on the 50th day before we read on to Shavuot? What do they do on Shavuot?
They
look at the text. It's not on my face. Right here. Yeah, we're doing Diane already read. What happens on the 50th day?
You give a new offering.
Right.
It's another holiday.
Right. It's a mincha chadasha l'Hashem. It's a meal offering. This one's made out of wheat. Now, both, by the way, as you may or may not know, Pesach itself is also aligned with the start of the barley harvest. It's a celebration of the barley harvest. Shavuot is also of the wheat harvest. Okay, both grains mature at different times in Israel. And then they brought a harvest, and then they weren't allowed, no Jew was allowed to eat of the of that harvest until the offering was brought in the temple. So on the 16th thing, they once they brought the Omer, then what they call all the grain that they had harvested since last Pesach until that point became, went from Chadash, new grain, the Yashan, Kemashachar, then they can all eat it. They couldn't eat it. It's forbidden to eat. Okay? All right, so keep on going, Diane. Pick it up from verse 20. Yeah.
Yeah, from the land upon which you live, you
should... Hold on, Diane. Hold on. Jamie has a question. Jamie. Don't, they count the Omer. We're going to...
Offering, like, was it 50 ounces every single day?
No, just no. Excellent question. They just did the offering on the first day. They did the Havat Omer, the bringing of the Omer offering, which had had the had lambs and actually had a meal offering, which they did. Which they also did a waving in the same way the direction that we waved the lulav. Okay, in the temple. But that night, that was only the Kohanim did that. But every Jew in Israel on that second night of Pesach would start the counting. First, this is the first day of the Omer. Second day of the Omer. Third day of the Omer, like we're doing today. Okay, that part stayed. There's a debate. Is that a biblical mandate? In other words, that obligation to count was independent of whether or not you have a temple and whether or not you're doing the offering, which is Maimonides, the Rambam's view. Or no, we're doing it like a Zecher, like a Zecher to the Migdash. This is a reminder of what they used to do in the time of the temple, very much like the Hill of Sandwich. This is what they used to do when they had the temple. We don't have a temple, so we're doing it as a commemoration. There's a debate. Is it biblical? It was the obligation to count every night of the Omer, all 49 evenings of the Omer, a biblical mandate?
The Kohanim, right?
Every Jew. Every Jew has to count the Omer. The only the Kohanim who are on call, on duty, they do the Omer offering. That's done once, to answer James' question. And then when they get to the 50th day, which we also call Shavuot, they do another offering that day, during the day of Shavuot day, okay? All right, back to you, Diane. Keep on going.
Gather, from the land upon which you live, you shall bring two loaves of bread as a wave offering. They shall be made of 2/10 of an ephah of wheat meal and shall be baked as leavened bread. They are the first harvest offering to God. Together with this bread, you shall sacrifice 7 unblemished yearling sheep, 1 young bull, and 2 rams. These, along with their meal offerings and libations, shall be a burnt offering to God as a fire offering, as an appeasing fragrance to God. You shall also prepare 1 goat as a sin offering and 2 yearling sheep as peace sacrifices. The priest shall make the motions prescribed for a wave offering before God with the bread for the first harvest offering and the 2 sheep. They belong to the priest as something sacred to God. This day shall be celebrated as a sacred holiday when no service work may be done. This is an eternal law for all generations, no matter where you may live. Furthermore, when you reap your land's harvest, do not completely harvest the ends of your field. Also, do not pick up individual stalks that may have fallen. You must leave all these for the poor and the stranger. I am God, your Lord.
Okay, so interesting. So he describes the holiday of Shavuot. There's no work done. You have a day we call nowadays a Yom Tov. You can do no work in the field. You can cook. You can do things that are for personal use, but you can't do commercial work. And have basically the offerings mentioned. What is not mentioned in the description of Shavuot? Hello? Don't say? And we know at the time, basically, because we know the Jews basically got to Harshina around 49 days, because we know they were in the third year, and we know that the third month, rather, the time correlates, you know, correlates about, you know, around 50 days. So we know it's around that time, but it's not mentioned. Okay,
it
hold
mentions
on.
The
It does mention that. So then, when you're doing the harvest, make sure that you don't harvest to the end, but you leave the corner and the fallen grains, wheats, and
for the poor,
which we depict dramatically in the story of Ruth. Okay, and shoot, yes.
Sacrifice is applied to every single Jew, because this would have been an
No, only this was done by excellent question. Only the Kohanim did it in the Mikdash one time on behalf of everybody. Nor there, this is an example of a national service. There are certain times they do national, or every day they do what they call the Tumid Shel, the continuous offering of which is basically one lamb in the morning, one lamb in the afternoon, and they're doing that on behalf of the Jewish people.
Can the Jewish people eat from those lambs?
They're completely consumed on the
altar. Only?
No, they don't get any of it. The bread, these breads that they're talking about is given to the Kohanim who are on that shift. So they're doing a national service on our behalf. There's the Yom kickoff on the second day of Pesach. Then we got Shavuot.
And the sacrifices are completely consumed by the fire.
Some of it might be in part eaten by the Kohanim.
Okay. But the sacrifices they mentioned, so it's not like different Jews or somebody rich donates it. It's just
no. So when we get whenever this goes back to another thing, when the Jew is given the yearly tax of a half a shekel, mm-hmm. that goes into the national the temple treasury, okay. and then basically from that money is then utilized for these national offerings. Okay. So that's the basic stuff. Let me just squeeze in four more pesukim to get the whole. Thing about counting. All right, Diane, keep on going. This now we shift to Moshe's recasting of it in Devarim 16:9.
Then count 7 weeks for yourself. From the time that you first put the sickle to the standing grain, you must count 7 weeks. You shall then celebrate the festival of Shavuot to God your Lord, presenting a handle of your offering according to the extent of the blessing that God your Lord has granted you. You shall rejoice before God your Lord in the place that God your Lord shall choose to be designated in his name. You shall rejoice along with your sons, your daughters, your male and female slaves, the Levites from your settlements, and the proselytes, orphans, and widows among you. You must remember that you were a slave in Egypt, and thus carefully keep all these rules.
Okay, so Moshe, in his retelling about the holiday of Shavuot in Devarim, adds a few things. He says, number one, counting 7 weeks. Okay, that part's the same. He does not mention the national service. He talks about you. We have to do what? Ola Regla. We have to celebrate Shavuot where? In the Beit HaMikdash, in Jerusalem. All Jews have to be in Jerusalem. How many times a year? 3 times a year. Pesach, Shavuot, Sukkot. And when you come, can you come empty-handed? No, you have to bring Korban. You have to Korban Re'iya, the offering of seeing Hashem, as it were, you're bringing a gift to show your hakara shetov to Hashem. There's a korban riyah, there's a korban chagiga, there's an offering of the holiday offering, and then there's the shalmei simcha offerings of animals which are going to have which are part of the simcha. Part of your meals are going to have these basically barbecue kind of food. What are you told? Who has to be part of your guest list? What does it say in verse 11? Who has to be? Who
basically
has to be,
everybody in the community, at large.
But specifically, what there are basically there are 8 people mentioned. There are 4 people who are your personal relatives,
the Levites,
and then the people who are not your relatives. Who are your 4 relatives? And your male and your female. You know, those are part of your. Those people are part of your greater family, part of the mishpacha. Okay, then. Then you have the Levium. Why they have to be? Why are they getting? What do Levium don't have in the biblical times? They don't have land. So therefore, what are they? What are they dependent upon for their livelihood? The people. So they get the Meister. They get 10% of agricultural yield, and they're invited to all the holiday meals. Who else? A proselyte is a ger, a convert. Why do they have to be invited? They don't have family. Excellent, Jane. Excellent. Very good. Orphans. Widows. Correct. So basically, and Rashi says something very beautiful. It says, if you make my 4 happy on the holiday, I'll make your 4 happy on the holiday. Which is that the idea is that on Yontif is not very different than a Thanksgiving concept. Thanksgiving is basically where you invite your close family and a few choice friends to have a big, massive meal. Here, it's a mitzvah, an enhancement, if you can invite people who don't have. Basically, no Jew left behind. So So if you know a Jew who doesn't have a place and is going to be, doesn't have to be as traumatic. They don't have food, but they're going to be sitting by themselves. And it's a mitzvah to invite them. Because that's really, because it's supposed to be a suda shel chesed. You got to include everybody. You can't, because it's a national holiday. So it can't be a national celebration if only the rich people are enjoying Yontif. So that's a very important, it's a revolutionary concept. So that's part of the Yontif, okay? So there's a lot of questions here. I don't know if we're going to get to all this stuff.
They don't have that, right?
I don't think so. Or they may have it if they've taken it from the Torah, but I don't know every practice of every non-Jew. So I have to say this is part of our it is definitely different than traditional sense of what historically a holiday has been, which is basically a personal thing. First of all, and only that, where would you want to celebrate Shavuot? Yeah, where? Where in Israel? No. You want to go to your own house. Do you want to celebrate it with like a million other Jews crammed into? I mean, it's like it's going to be three times a year. I'm not saying there's not upside. It's like I'm not saying there's a big part. There is a big party thing, but Hashem warns the Jews for Pesach, don't offer, basically they'll slaughter the Korban Pesach and have your Pesach Seder at your house. You got your house, you got your couch, you got your bed. Even if you travel, anybody who's done travel for work, even if you go to a gorgeous hotel that night and sleep, even if it's like the best possible bed, it's never the same comfort as your own bed. Because they've done studies that your first bed night of sleeping away is less good than it until you adjust. Okay, then if you're nice, we're talking about a premium hotel. Unless you're staying at a not premium hotel, well, then, it gets worse and worse. So there is a motivation for the Jew who wants to do, basically purely a personal experience. He doesn't want to do a national, but Yontif is about the national. You're showing your celebration for the blessings that Hashem has granted you. And you have to show that, your appreciation, by including people who don't have. So that's what the holiday is about. Okay? So, So why does question number seven is a little bit big. I mean, run out of time. We started late, partially it's my fault, came late. But question number six, why doesn't the Torah record a date for Shavuot like all the other holidays? You look through the Torah, for example, what is the date given for Pesach? When does Pesach begin? 15th of Nisan. In fact, 14th is the holiday of the Chag HaPesach, where you take the Pesach offering. That's why Chametz is forbidden already by the daytime, or Laba, that by the daytime. And you have the Chag HaMatzot, and then it goes into the Chag HaPesach, goes into the Chag HaMatzot, okay? There's a Passover, a sacrificial offering holiday, which then goes over the Pesach, which is on the 15th day. So, Sukkot, when is Sukkot on the Jewish holiday, on Jewish calendar? What day of Tishrei? What day of Tishrei does the Torah say? Guess. 15th, correct, excellent, we're on a roll here. Yom Kippur. When does the Torah say Yom Kippur is on? The 10th of Tishrei. When is Rosh Hashanah? This is an easy one. The first. What is not given a specific date? Shavuos. When is its date? 50 days from Pesach. Okay, I have to explain that. So why is it not? When is its date? And that's why in the time before they had a fixed calendar, it was possible for them to observe Shavuot on the 5th of Sivan, on the 6th of Sivan, or on the 7th of Sivan. Leap year is always, they only add the same 1 month, Adar Rishon and then Adar Sheni. But then after comes Nisan. So Nisan, they calculate when it should be, and they wait for the way that the court would do it. They do the math when there should be the first mola, when there should be astronomically the first sighting. And then they wait for witnesses to come to verify that or to testify that they saw the new moon. So if they don't come, it could be the next day. So, which means that the next month, which is after Nisan comes ER. So they could, make it the month Maleh, 30 days versus 29, Therefore, you're pushing the, you can push the date a little longer. You know what I mean? So, you know what I'm saying? So the point is that you're going to end up having, it doesn't have, it's literally 50 days. When is it starting? From the 50 days from the second day of Pesach. And the question is, well, what is, why was it not given its own unique date? And Ilya was already on the move on that.
If we give us like state, it kind of makes the point about the killing.
We're going to get to that also. We're going to get to that. Hold that thought. That you're onto something good. Let's just deal with one question. We're low on time, so I can't cover it. We have a huge amount of stuff here. Maybe we'll take upon it next time. Why? So Ilya, and this, why is Shavuot not given its own date?
Like the Passover, I would imagine, because if, let's say, Passover is the beginning of when the Jews left from Egypt, it accumulated towards Shavuot. So, like, that's when they received the Torah.
So what idea is this? What message? You're very warm. What message is being taught to us by the Torah? The fact is that's the 50th day from the second day of Pesach. Hold on, let him finish. He's very close. Let him get the.
What message? Second day of Pesach. Oh, the freedom. We got freedom, and then the first thing we did with that freedom was create a calendar. Look at the moon.
Well, so that was already in the shrine. why is Shavuot? So Hanan, you want to add to that?
Because we got out of Egypt as late, we were on the 49th level of Tuma.
That's correct.
We were at the lowest level, and like if we were like one more level down, we wouldn't have been saved.
Right.
And in order to receive such a holy thing as the Torah, we need to be able to sanctify ourselves and purify ourselves and elevate ourselves to be worthy of receiving the Torah. So the Torah gives us a hint by saying 50 days from when you were freed in order that you shall sanctify yourself before receiving the Torah.
That is a true idea, and we're going to get to that as well. I think that's a secondary, but there's a more, I think a primary idea, which I think Ilya basically said, is that basically the message, and I think you're both saying the main point, which is that basically the goal of Yetziat Mitzrayim, of the Exodus, is Shavuot, is the receiving the Torah. There is physical freedom, but the goal is spiritual freedom. And the fact that they were not incarcerated and they became emancipated physically, they had to go through a spiritual journey.
Cleansing,
you can describe it all kinds of ways, for 49 days, which we talked about, different aspects, to get to Shavuot. So therefore, you see that the main goal, in a certain sense, the main goal, the objective of Pesach is really what? Shavuot. In other words, no goal, nor to
turn. You're not free until you receive the Torah.
Right, which is another thing, that you're not free. In other words, there is. So the true freedom is that, if you want to say, you can say it, the true freedom is spiritual freedom. You can say it different ways. The true freedom is the freedom of the soul. The true freedom is the ability to have, be truly able to choose between true right and wrong. Be able to have the freedom to make moral choices. I'm saying the same way in different words, but just to flesh it out. So therefore, to make that point clear, Shavuot is not given a fixed date. It's viewed as the culmination of this whole journey. So much so that the Ramban, Nachmanides, calls it that this time is like sort of a Chol HaMoed. It's an interim period between Pesach and Shavuot, in a certain sense. That it's to show that the holidays are connected. They're not, we have Pesach here, then we got Shavuot here, and then we got Sukkot over here. You see, the Pesach culminates in Shavuot, okay? And that's identified by what phenomena? Counting to it, 50 days, and no fixed date.
also why it's 50 and not 49, because 49 is of this world and the 50th is beyond this world, just like for the Brit Milah.
Seven days. I've heard that concept. I've heard that concept.
Because 49 is the physical, and then once you read your super, you're elevating yourself. Right.
All these, it's more mystical. These are all of the same motif. Now, so the question, of course, is another idea. Is why do we count? So just everybody open up to the sheet and success.
Can I add a quick comment?
Yeah, go ahead.
So the Vilna Gaon, who was a big rabbi.
Yes,
I think in Poland, right?
In Lithuania.
In Vilna.
Vilna, Lithuania. Yeah.
Lithuania.
There you go.
And he was a genius, like both in the Torah and also in math and in science and everything.
Yes, true.
He was a complete genius. So
true.
He said that, you know, if you learn Torah without learning the ethics of our fathers, Pirkei Avot or the Gemara, or the what our Mesorah, our tradition teaches us, Torah will empower you, will make you grow. Just like, as we know, in Parshat Hazinu, it's when before Moshe passed away, he said, Zinu Hashamayim Vadabera Tizal Katal Imrati, and Tizal Kamatal
Imrati.
Tizal Kamatal Likhi. Right. So just like the water, which he refers to as the Torah, right, comes from the sky as rain, and it could make the Vilna Gaon says it could make anything grow. If it falls on flowers or fruit, it will make the flowers or the fruit grow. But if it will fall on the poisonous plant, it will make that one grow as well. And that's why during this period, the Vilna Gaon says, learning Pirkei Avot and Musar is helping us and empower us in the right direction.
Okay, I'm going to get to that. Hold that thought. Let's take it. Rambam, Guide to Perplexed. Let's take a look at this. Everybody got that? All right. So let me just read it out just very briefly because I'm running low on time. The Shavuot is the anniversary of the revelation on Mount Sinai. In order to raise the importance of the day, we count the days that pass since the preceding holiday, just as one expects the most intimate friend on a certain day counts the day and even the hours. This is the reason that while we count the days that pass since the offering of the Omer, between the anniversary of our departure from Egypt and the anniversary of our giving the Torah. The later is the aim and the object or the goal of the exodus from Egypt. And God said, I brought you unto myself. Hashem brought us to him. As that great revelation took place only on one day, we only keep that anniversary for one day. But if by eating of unleavened bread on Pesach we're only commanded for one day, we would not have noticed it. Or even though we left Egypt one day, we should only have a one-day holiday for Pesach. But in order to make, its goal would not be manifest. But it frequently happens that we take the same food for 2 or 3 days. But by continuing the entire period for 7 days to eat matzah, the object becomes clear and evident. Basic point is, in order for matzah to have an impact, you got to have a week-long changing of the diet. If you don't have it for one day, it won't have any impact. That's why Pesach, even though both events, the Exodus happened on one day, Parsin happened on one day, Shavuot is one day, Pesach is 7 days, because the way that we remember it is by the changing of the diet. So people have the same food for 1 or 2 days. But if you're going to have matzah for an entire week, you're going to feel it. I think everybody did notice that personally. So makes an impact. I want to ask a question. So he says, and I think everybody said this, that we count to show the dearness. You count toward you're going to see a friend in a week or 10 days. But I'll ask a question that Rabbi Mann asked. The question is, that would make sense if you count down, or if you're going on a vacation, right? Let's say you're going to be going on vacation in 3 weeks, 21 days till you go to Cancun. Then it's 20 days, 18 days, 13 days.
You're excited.
Excitement is building. Here we do, say it's the first day of the Omer, and then it's the second day of the Omer, the third day, the 40th day, then the 49th day, and then 49th day, done. So why are we counting up instead of counting down? Ilya again is on a roll tonight. Yeah. Line that up. Okay. But if he's but he's saying it's to show anticipation. So I like what you're saying, and that's true. But I think there's one extra thing. I want to give it another analogy that will, your Hanukkah example and with the Rama saying it together. The idea is that imagine a person is on a specific let's say workout program, okay? And you know, it's not so simple. So they're following their atomic habits, okay? I mean, did you all right? Today I walked. Tomorrow, day two, I did some weights. Day three, I did some biking. You know, whatever my four, I did some yoga. You know, each day is an accomplishment, growing upon the previous day. I did some measure of helpful motion or movement, right? So each day is a growth to what I've done. And that's really what the point that you were going on is that the basis is not that that we're just counting the days. And it is an anticipation, but it's also marking the growth toward Harsinah to be able to be eligible for Harsinah. You can't walk into Harsinah.
You have to refine your character.
Yeah, but again, following the idea of James Lear, not too much. Because then what's gonna happen if on day seven, I'm going to go to the gym and spend 2 hours at the gym? What is the chance that I'm going to be at the gym the next day?
It's going to be overworked.
0% chance, because I will be sore. I have to go to the chiropractor. I need to full body massage. I'm sore. I need ice. I'm taking Advils. I'm feeling old. I can't do it. I'd be up and sit. I would have said, I'm done. I'm out. Right? Okay, I'm always speaking from personal experience. You can apply it to yourself to the extent that you can. You're not going to do it. That's it. You're done. You're burnt out. I can't do this. I know there might be some people that can do it, but I'm not that kind of person. Whatever. So the bottom line is, but if you're building, 1%, as he said, if you do one, if you try to get 1% better every day over the course of the year, you're going to get 37%, 37 times better in a particular area. Sustainable growth. And that's the idea. So the point is, I want to share, is that when we say the Sefirot HaOmer every night, it's not simply just simply to say the Omer, Hayom Yom, you know, tonight, that I already counted already. So Hayom Yom Tisha Yamim, Shem Shuvah Echad V'Shnei Yom LaOmer. But the goal really is to say, you know, to think about what can I do in a small level. You think small, focus on tiny, tiny atomic size to grow, to be better toward being able to receive the Torah come Shavuot time. And that really is it. So doing the mitzvah of Sefirot HaOmer is beautiful, but to make it really impactful, as we were describing, to really be that I'm meaningfully better than I was on Pesach, and I'm growing, that whatever, I'm going to read, one page of, you know, from this Torah book that I've been looking at on my shelf. Or I'm going to, whatever, I'm going to engage, I'm going to call that relative I've been saying I want to visit or call them. It could be an act of chesed. Oh, I'm going to give that charity some money that I've been saying I'm going to do, but I haven't done. Okay. Just a little bit, That's it. So the key thing is that to have a moment of reflection on the thing is that it's the ninth day of the Omer. What can I do on a small thing, a little micro habit? Can I do to what 2 minute thing can I do? What friction can I remove? And that's the thing. So that is a bit. There are more stuff here. Let me just see if I have a little more time. That's a major takeaway. Another point is that part of the reason that that at least speaking of myself, that we don't grow as much as we want to is because we look at the big scary goal and get intimidated by that. What's going to work necessary to do that? what the Sirat Omer and I think James Clear of Atomic Habits saying is, take something small. Don't look at the scary finish line. Look at the reasonable start line. And what could I do to, you know, as it were, I'm not going to say I'm going to walk. I'm just going to put on my sneakers. And I'm going to stand outside. So I likely do something. A workable aid, but just to remove the friction so that'll actually happen. Not just to be, I would like to be that, because then, as he said, something very beautiful. Every time you do these habits on the small level, it reinforces an identity. I am the person that learns Torah. I am the person that does chesed. I am the person that is gives tzedakah. Every small thing, it reinforces that muscle, that identity. There's a part of you that's there. It just brings that out from the background to the foreground. And that's powerful stuff. And that can make
the drop that Rabbi Akiva was.
That's a good example. Rabbi Akiva was way ignorant than everybody around his table. He knew nothing. He knew how to, he made a living. He was involved sheep herding. He was a shepherd, making a living in that culture. And then he saw that, the drop had made a profound impact on that huge stone. And even though the key point was that imperceptible change over long periods of time can make dramatic results, which, in finance compound interest. There's compound interest, the power of compound interest. I know where you're going on that one, baby. So compound interest, but as far as there's compound interest in spiritual growth, even though, and you can get from, what did I do? Even if I come to, I came on Wednesday night, what did I really accomplish? No. Because even if you look back how much we learned this year, we actually learned a nice amount of Torah. And then you just see, I'll define a little bit deeper. We want that satisfaction of accomplishment at the onset. You have to be able to step away from that and that need for that accomplishment from the very beginning. Just say, I want to accomplish that. I did my micro habit and I accomplished that. Versus, I can only be happy if I'm at the finish line with the gold with the gold medal and whatever the accomplishment is. You know what I'm saying? You can accomplish a powerful amount even when the growth is imperceptible. And to get onto the Sirat Omer train and just do a little bit per day, huge results. Huge results. So that's all I want to share with you tonight. All right, guys. Thank you. All right, so next week is very important. Next week is Yom HaShoah. And they're gonna have a meeting. They are, if they're able to get a survivor, I mean, that person's in their 90s, and we are of the generation where we're going to see in our own lifetime the last of the survivors. So if there is a survivor able to come, I understand that, but I'm just up my, but okay, she is here this year. Okay, she's here this year. My point being is that,
it's good to hear what she has to say.
It's important to hear. There's something very dramatic to hear a person telling their own personal story of coming out of the Holocaust, live versus watching a video. Video is important, but I'm just saying. So if you guys come next week, they're going to get a powerful program. So I don't know when it is. You'll get 6,000 emails about this.
There was an email that was sent out like the other day.